I wish that you could listen to all the conversations that we have before we hit the record button. My name is Tom Rayner. You're at Rayner on Leadership. I am with Sam Rayner, and we're going to be talking about five major reasons your church may be stuck. Now, here's the reality of the off conversations. We're talking about everything from churches that have turned around to worship experiences. The list just goes on and on. We get into these conversations. There are times, quite frankly, that I just wish we were recording. And then there are times when I say, no, I'm glad we weren't recording that, because I actually recommended a new nickname to my team. We've got Amy here, and we've got Kevin here, as well as Sam and me. And what are we in, four different states? Yeah, four different states. We're in Franklin, Tennessee. That's where I am. Amy's in the Richmond, Virginia area. Kevin's in Lexington, Kentucky. Sam's in Bradenton, Florida. And we're just talking about, you know, what should they call me? And it gets awkward because I really don't want to remain Dr. Rayner until my death. It's just, it kind of gets that way. But like, Amy was my executive assistant at Lifeway. In addition to all the roles she has now, she continues to also be my executive assistant. But she's never known me as anything but Dr. Rayner. Kevin's kind of that way, but he doesn't have nearly as much respect for me as Amy does. So you never know what he's going to call me. And then there's my son, Sam. Usually it's Dad Sam, but you've had other names for me. And
I have an idea.
What is that?
This is brilliant.
So thank you for your modesty.
For our listeners.
Yes.
My dad needs a new nickname. So I think that you should hit him up on Twitter and just give him some suggestions as to what his new nickname should be. Let's let the listeners decide.
That's a great idea. That's @TomRayner on Twitter. That's where we're going to be looking. You can put it in the comments here as well. But let's name the old man. Huh? It's kind of like pin the tail on the donkey.
Two very appropriate metaphors.
Yes, exactly. You got an old donkey, and you're trying to pin something on the donkey. Now we're trying to pin the name on me. Well, we've got a fun exercise.
We may regret this one, but it's still worth it.
Let's go for it. Episode number 588, five major reasons your church may be stuck. Had a conversation yesterday with William Vanderblumen, and we were talking about a lot of good things. We were talking about things like emotional intelligence. We're talking about leadership that has failed. We just had a great conversation. We're talking about people that ask questions that they shouldn't. I mean, that's kind of in the emotional intelligence area. But I love always having questions and conversations with William. Vanderblumen has been serving churches for more than 9 years. But did you know that Vanderblumen also serves Christian schools, nonprofits, and Christian businesses? Matter of fact, a couple of 3 or 4 days from this recording, I'll be talking to an organization, a nonprofit organization, about Vanderblumen. And I really hope that they become a part of that team as well. So if you know a Christian school, nonprofit, values-based business that is hiring, please contact our friends at Vanderblumen.com. Sam, today we're going to talk about church. Well, five reasons why churches are stuck. This one's going to be fun. Before we get into this, I don't want to forget it. We had in Bradenton in when did we have these? In 2019. Was it September, October? Late September?
September, October.
We had 4 micro consultations where we brought together no more than 10 leaders from 10 churches at a time to talk about getting unstuck. And we gave them a vision statement, or we worked with them to devise a vision statement. We worked with them to devise a strategic plan. Man, I don't know about you, but I came out of the micros feeling pretty excited about the direction these churches were taking.
I've already talked to people today, actually. Right. You don't know this, but right before we started recording a podcast, I had a pastor saying, how do I get into that? What can I do? I'd love to be a part of it. It was truly revolutionary for those that took it. I mean, it's a lot of fun. But it's a lot of work, and you come away with your action plan. That's the beauty of these micros.
Yep. And they will be walking away in the future. Every time we do these, we tweak it for the better. They'll be walking away in the future with an actual document. They had a document to begin with, but it was a 3-ring binder. This is going to be something that they can transport and add to on a regular basis and even get more of these. So we'll talk about that. If you're interested in that, here's what we've done. We had to close it to assimilate all those who have come in. And so we said, okay, just hang on. We'll be reopening it in the very near future. It is now reopened. So look at your links. If you want to get in before they fail, it's only 10 per place. We have 4 in Bradenton. We have 4 in Franklin, Tennessee. That's a total of 80 spots. We will not go over that. So if you want to get in, you better hurry and get in quickly for the 2020 micros. You can get all the information on our link that is there. That's a segue into 5 major reasons your church may be stuck. Let's go to these, Sam. Somehow, I just have this feeling that the Church of First Herbie may come up in this conversation. Because of number one, there is idolatry of the past. They had a different kind of idolatry, though.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about my first church, Union Van Baptist, wonderful people. Herbie was the lone deacon, very similar to your story in Indiana with Merle. You say the Church of First Merle or the Church of First Herbie, you're talking about kind of the key leaders in the church. Yeah, no, I mean,
we're talking about the leader in the church.
It's singular, yes. A lot of your listeners can relate, no doubt. Yeah, Union Band was one of those churches that stuck might be an understatement because they hadn't even had services in 2 years before I got there. And they had, even though they didn't have services, they still had traditions, believe it or not, if that's even possible. They're not even gathering for worship, and yet these traditions still exist. And I found out some of them as I pastored. They had certain icons in the church, certain tchotchkes, if you will, that had been given to the church. And those in many ways were the tchotchkes. Yes, I think I've said that right.
I have no idea.
Okay.
I said I have no idea if you said it right or not.
Okay. We have them in my house. My wife loves them. I call them house dander. She collects them and I try to throw them away without her knowing, which is not a good thing to do in your home. It is not a good thing to do in the church. So yeah, they hung on to these things that had been given over the years, like they were, you know, somehow salvific in and of themselves. They were almost to the point of being.
With Aaron, I'm trying to remember, what is that thing by your front door that she bought?
Which thing? Which one?
Well, there's this big, I can't remember what it is. It's kind of this big thing that's standing by the front door. I know you sent a picture of it to me and your brothers.
Oh no, that's a painting. That was a painting of a baby shrimp.
Oh yeah, it's a big painting.
It's a big painting, a very large painting of a very small creature, a baby shrimp. Yes.
I remember that. It's really, really different. So when we talk about idolatry of the past, what we are saying is the way that you get people to begin to move from idolatry of programs, idolatry of the way we've always done it, the order of worship, idolatry of a certain room like a parlor in the church, even idolatry of a worship style, that can happen. You have to move them to a future. So anytime you give a future state, you are beginning to push leaders beyond the past and into the future. So
yeah, and let me just speak briefly about why this happens. They become symbols. The pulpit becomes a symbol. The pews become a symbol. The worship style become a symbol. And they represent something. So just because something is a symbol doesn't mean that people are idolizing it. So you have to make a distinction as a leader. It could be that the church has the wrong symbol. It could be that they're hanging on to the wrong things. Now, symbols can become idols. Symbols can become things that people in essence worship. But idolatry, I just want to make that distinction between what people may hang on to as symbolic and what they may idolize.
All right, let's go to number two. Critics and bullies are holding the church hostage. I want to be clear, they're two different categories. Every church has people who are critics. And quite frankly, we're all a critic of something at some time or another. A bully is different. A bully is someone who is a control freak who is actually trying to run the church his or her way. So one of the reasons, and we deal with this a lot, Sam, at Church Answers, and we just listen and read the stories of these bullies coming in and basically telling the pastor, you try to lead and you're done for. But there's a difference between a critic and a bully.
Yeah, absolutely. You're going to have critics and people are going to criticize you for any number of things. You know, and the thing is one day somebody will be your supporter because of a certain issue, and the next day they may be your critic. The bully is the one that's a little more consistent. No matter what you stand for, no matter what you do, they seem to be they seem to be after you. And there seems to be no rhyme or reason to it other than they want to exert power over you and to bring you down. So just because somebody's a critic doesn't necessarily mean that they're a bully.
I'm trying to see, we're releasing this on November 12th. So for you listeners, I'm looking at my show notes to find out, we're recording it earlier, of course, and trying to find out. I doubt my book will be out at this point, but in the very near future, there is a book that is coming out called Anatomy of a Revived Church. It is the prequel to my book, Autopsy of a Deceased Church, and it's basically how churches avoided death. They were headed toward death and how they avoided death. I talk about bullies in that book. I mean, I talk about that issue. And basically I'm saying in that book, as I've talked to pastors for 30 years, if a bully persists, you cannot kick the can. You've got to deal with the issue one way or the other. So that is the painful reality and the painful solution. You're going to have critics and you just deal with them as they come. But if there's a bully that is truly holding the church hostage, you have got to deal with that issue one way or another, whether it is a one-on-one confrontation that then goes to a Matthew 18 confrontation, or even in the extreme cases where that person has to leave the church. Critics and bullies cannot hold the church hostage, especially the bullies. This one, Sam, we deal with this a lot in consultations. We deal with this a lot in at Church Answers. The pastor's been burned in the past. And as a result, instead of leaving, he's looking on the left, looking in the right, looking over his shoulder and saying, man, he's measuring everything by what might happen. He's responding in leadership about how people may respond negatively. So many churches get stuck because the pastor is stuck. I see it a lot.
Yeah, I mean, to quote David Jeremiah, fear trades in the market of possibilities. The maybes.
Say that one more time.
Fear will trade in the market of possibilities. So the maybes are what get you. Maybe this will happen. Maybe that'll happen. Maybe this person will rise up. Maybe I'm going to get criticized. Maybe someone will, you know, try to lead a charge to get me out. The maybes are what get you. And that's where pastors themselves can, through their own fear, cause the church to become stuck. And when you're leading from a posture, when you're in a posture of fear, you are not leading. And so you can't fear leading change. The fear will get you. And the fear is typically those things that are maybes. And you have to move past that. You have to push past those fears.
I have had countless pastors and leaders ask me this question. What if you fear and you know you fear? How do you overcome that fear? And my response has been, act anyway. Sometimes
pray and act anyway. Yeah.
That's even better. Pray and act anyway. I've led change in different organizations. I'm far from a perfect leader. But when I think of some of the decisions that I've made that have been very change oriented, that have been dramatic from the church or for the organization, like Lifeway or whatever, the posture that I had, I did have some fear. I mean, it wasn't like, oh, this doesn't bother me at all. I'm not worried about the consequences. But when I did it well, which was not always, but when I did it well, I led through that fear. So I prayed and I led through that fear. And if I go back on 2020 hindsight on past decisions, some of the best decisions that I think I made were made moving out of fear, but still acknowledging that I had concerns about what the repercussions are. I just didn't let them hold me hostage.
I've been there many times as a pastor, but we got to move on to point four.
Okay, let's move on to point four. The church likes evangelism in theory only. You know, we're talking about the micros early on. We were talking about those events that we had in Bradenton that we're going to have in both Bradenton and Franklin, Tennessee. And everybody around the table, every one of those pastors, all 40 of them in the four different micros, were adamant that they wanted, that we should be obedient to the Great Commission. And yet in many of those churches, when we began to say, what are you doing? They were doing a lot of good things, but there was no really true disciple-making activity. And I'm going to say this, I'll shut up and let you come in on this, Sam. I don't think we can effectively make disciples unless we are bringing people back into the local church. Hear me well. I know that people can pray and be made disciples. I know that you can mentor outside the local church. Understand that some disciple-making activity like reading the Bible can and should take place. But I'm saying the church is the place of accountability, both for the member and the leadership. And if you don't have something intentional that is actually connecting people back into the church, basically you're saying the Great Commission is really about this ministry in the community that doesn't connect. Our evangelism is about this program that does not connect. All of those may be good, but if there's not an intentionality to connect people into the church, it becomes evangelism in theory only, certainly Great Commission in theory only.
Yeah, I've done a lot of consultations, and not all of them, but I would say the majority of them, this is a problem in the church, where you do a survey of the church, you ask the people questions, they know what evangelism is. They have an understanding of what they are supposed to do, but they are simply not doing it. And so we have to bridge the part of what leadership needs to do in the church is to bridge that divide between I know what to do and I am actually doing what I know what to do.
And again, I may be doing overkill on the micros, but they're actually great illustrations. We literally did not let those pastors leave until they had a plan to connect to their community in a way that brought people to the church. So they had not only to come up with a vision statement, they had to come up with a strategy that actually had tactics and deadlines and champions associated with it. And they found, most of them, Sam, found that that was the missing piece in their churches.
Yeah, we do the same thing at my church. We don't let people leave the worship service until they commit to do evangelism. It's been revolutionary.
Those become really...
I'm going to keep preaching until you guys commit to do this. So it may not work in your church, but... And in fact, I don't do that in my church.
Yeah, I was about to say, I have dual membership in your church and your brother's Jess church, and I've been in your services many times, and I can just say he does not do that.
Holding people hostage may not be the best tactic in getting them to do what they should be doing.
I would have broken out one way or the other. The entire time. So the church likes evangelism in theory only. Number five, the church has become activity driven. When Eric Geiger and I wrote Simple Church, it was about a process of discipleship. It was not about just about eliminating a bunch of things that you're doing, but that was part of it. It was, if you look at clarity, movement, alignment, focus, the parts of Simple Church, the focus was eliminating things that just are becoming busy work. Why is it that churches collect activities, programs, and the just busyness, and it just, instead of being reduced to something effective, it just accumulates like Aaron's stuff in your house.
You said it, not me. Yeah, I would say one, pastors have difficulty with closure, meaning something's not working anymore and then closing it down. And then you're left with the 3, 4, 10 volunteers that are still doing it. They don't know any better. And then the other thing is not only do pastors struggle with closure, they also struggle with just on the front end saying no to things that don't fit the vision or mission of the church. And so you get these handful of people that mean well and do well, and these activities just collect like your house may collect house dander items. And it's an issue. I'm guilty. I've been guilty of saying yes when I shouldn't have said yes to people and not directing them in the right way. And I've been guilty of not closing things down when they should have been closed down.
That is why one of the things we advocate every year is not only a zero base budget, which means you start from scratch and say, if we were starting over, this is what the budget would be. We recommend a zero base ministry as well. You may not be able to do that in actuality, but at least you go to the exercise of saying, if we were to start over, what ministries would we keep? What ministries would we start and what would we not include?
So we do that with our calendar, zero base budget and zero base calendar. So every year we're planning, you know, new stuff. And then how do we fund these items? There are obviously some things, activities where we say, wow, the church isn't ready for this to go away. Maybe its time is coming, but the church isn't quite ready. And so we're going to be gentle and kind and gracious and keep doing it, even though we know that perhaps it's coming to an end. So it's not an excuse just to cancel everything. That's not always the best thing. But at least you're thinking strategically and intentionally about why you're doing what you're doing. So yeah, practicing both a zero-based calendar and a zero-based budget is a good way to go. It's a good way to start being better about the accumulation of activities.
Once again, let me remind you that we have reopened our micros. You can see the link that is we're going to work with you and 9 other leaders. That's it. Either in Franklin, Tennessee or Bradenton, Florida, Franklin, Tennessee. You can get the link there. We actually divide them by church size so that there's commonality among all the churches. So thank you for being a part of Rainer on Leadership. As always, thank you, Southeastern Seminary. The mission of Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary is to glorify the Lord Jesus Christ by equipping students to serve the church and fulfill the Great Commission. School has 40 degree programs. One of our favorites, the Master of Arts in Church Revitalization, in partnership with Revitalized Network and Church Answers. You can get information on that by clicking on to sebts.edu. They're trying to help churches move from flatline to flourishing. Where are you going? Southeastern will help you get there. Once again, thank you for being with us on episode number 588, 5 major reasons your church may be stuck. Well, look at these reasons, consider them, and maybe make a comment about some of the things you're doing about them. As always, thank you for being a part of this podcast where we continue to help churches get healthier together.